It's the Fall KBOO Drive, and our theme is the sounds of democracy. Everything you hear on KBOO is, in its own way, the sound of democracy, because we are a community radio station. Community is one of the most democratic types of media. We're non-commercial and independent. We're supported by our members so that we can keep the airwaves democratic and continue to bring you the valuable voices of your community. Democracy is an experiment, and so is community radio. We're featuring content focused on democracy itself and democratic ideas across the schedule this drive. You can support KBOO by donating right now. Go to kboo.fm/give or on your mobile phone, text KBOO to 44321 or click donate in the KBOO mobile app. Thank you for supporting your community radio station.
I am Dr. Demento. I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series. Join KBOO in celebrating and paying tribute to the contributions and enriching influences of Hispanic and Latinx Americans and their ancestors. You'll hear from volunteer producers from Buscando America, Boogie Pachanguero, Noticias en Español, and more. Again, that's KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series, every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Times Like Now is an interview program. I like speaking with interesting people that are doing cool stuff, and you can find past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. My guest today, Sean Powers, is a stand-up comic who has learned his craft and honed his skills while walking the Pacific Crest Trail on this episode of Times Like Now. Hello, Sean Powers. Thank you for joining me on the program today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so a little bit of your background. You spent some time in Latin America in, when was that, like a few years ago, teaching. And what was that like being in during COVID time?
So most recently, I was in Bogota, Colombia, and it's scary kind of in a way to be a foreigner in a foreign place when something goes down. I mean, I had lived there for 3 years, so it had become my home, but my Spanish is only fluent to a certain extent, and for the military to kind of take over and walk the streets and for everyone to go inside. And it felt like I was in that movie, I Am Legend, or an episode of Black Mirror, where I'm walking around and I can see all these giant apartments. It's a city of 11 million people and everyone's sitting at their windows. They're looking out at you. You can really only go outside if you're going to the grocery store, the pharmacy, the doctor, and you have to have like a legitimate excuse. I think I got a lot of grace because I'm a foreigner and I can speak enough Spanish where I can tell them, hey, I'm just going to the grocery store, or I need to go to this place, and that the streets were completely abandoned. It was a very bizarre and surreal experience. And then for the school, they messaged us and said, hey, there won't be a flight until we don't know when. Your visas are going to run out, because my initial 2020 plan, as everybody's changed, was I'm going to do 2 to 3 years in Bangladesh next. So I was leaving anyway, and they're like, because you're leaving, we've got a whole cohort of teachers. You've got 2 weeks to get out. You got 2 weeks to wrap everything up, to do all the paperwork. And if you don't make this flight, it's this special flight that the U.S. Embassy has organized. Good luck. You're kind of on your own. You have to be on your own for getting an apartment, getting a visa, etc. And they're like, that's not going to happen at this time. So it was weird to be uprooted and then to be dropped back in the United States. And it feels like the common answer was like, oh, you're back at home. Everything should be comfortable. Where not really. I'd been living in a different place for 6 years. There was a little bit of a reverse culture shock, and especially to come from a place that everyone was following the rules in Bogota versus getting flown into Florida and having that experience of people.
Well, Florida would be a culture shock.
It is a culture shock.
Anytime.
And people were yelling at us for wearing our masks, like making fun of us. And I was just like, where am I? And then driving, because we drove from, we all got like cars and we drove to our home destinations for the summer to end up our, to end that school year to get ready for the next one. And I drove to Minnesota, and driving through the United States, I just felt this intense feeling of anger from people, of frustration from people. And I was just like, is this my home? It was strange. So as much as being in Bogota, having empty streets and ending almost like a fantasy life for the last 3 years, that was weird. But the weirdest part was coming back to the United States, where it should be my home, but it doesn't feel like my home anymore.
That's very sad. I hope you're getting better and getting over that that bit. So moving forward, when did you decide to walk the Pacific Crest Trail? What brought that on?
And no one will ever admit this, especially on the PCT, but that movie and book Wild really inspired me, because from the Midwest, I don't know much about these long distance trails. Like, people on the East Coast have the Appalachian Trail, people on the West Coast have the Pacific Crest Trail. And when I read about that and I saw it, and I was just like, this is a cool thing. While Cheryl Strayed had her own vision of what her PCT journey meant to her and why she was doing it, I'd never heard of that lifestyle. And it was the year that that movie came out. It was when I was moving to Guatemala. And I was like, if I ever move back to the United States, I want to do that. And because COVID's, the school's response in Bangladesh, and the country, and I just didn't feel safe moving to Bangladesh and starting a new life during a pandemic in Dhaka, Bangladesh. Decided not to go, reneged on my contract. Things were, I worked it out with the school, and I saw the door open and I was like, this is my opportunity. I got to walk through. And I said, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to take a substantial 5 month long hike to do something that I've always wanted to do, that I feel strongly and feel pulled towards, I also feel strongly and pulled towards comedy. So I was like, I've got 5 months. I think I'm just going to start working on transitioning my life to following my passions.
Admirable. That's following your bliss. That's fantastic. Were you doing comedy before you began the walk?
Last year, around this time, I downloaded like How to Write Stand-Up Comedy audiobook, because I wanted to see what there was about comedy, and I also wanted to do a practice hike. So I did. It's called the Superior Hiking Trail. It's from the border of Canada in Minnesota, don't you know? And it goes along Lake Superior. It's 350 miles. And I was like, okay, this is going to be like my test run of, can I do a long distance hike and can I write comedy? And throughout this book, his name's Steven Rosenberg. And he revealed that he was Jim Gaffigan's stand-up coach. And for me, especially a Midwest guy, I was like, Jim Gaffigan's my hero. I want to write stand-up like him. I was super, like, it was definitely like appeal to authority, but it made this person's credibility go so much higher in my aspect, in my eyes. Because when I heard him break down what comedy was, I was like, no, it's not. He broke it down like it was like an algorithm. It's a setup punch. It's just a setup with a twist. There's a certain pattern that you can break. Here's an act out. This is what an impression is. And I was like, this isn't. And then he starts going through every single one of my like favorite comedians, every single one of my favorite bits. And I'm like, oh my God, he's so right. There is a archetype. There's a skeleton to this. And then you eventually learn, you learn the rules, and then you learn your voice, and then you learn how to navigate your voice through the rules and how to break the rules and how to become a great stand-up comedian. I was like resistant at first of, no, it's not that simple. And then I was like, it is that simple. And then, so then I think I'm all, I know the basics. I know how to write jokes. I'm all like confident and cocky. It's like, oh, it takes everybody 10 years. It's going to take me 2. And then I go up on stage for the first time and I try stand-up comedy on Zoom, and it's like, oh, this is way harder than I could ever imagine. There's so much I have to learn about gesturing, about confidence, about timing, about writing, about syllables, about... It's unbelievable the things that a stand-up comedian has to learn. It's just like, if I get to the point where I'm happy with my stand-up in 10 years, I'd be lucky. So, to answer your question, sorry, I go off on like little tirades.
Oh, that's okay.
The Through Hike really gave me the chance to, the first Superior Hiking Trail gave me the chance to learn about comedy. And then I was like, over the next 6 months, as I prepared for the PCT working on my savings, and because to take a 5.5 month long hike, you have to be in a pretty lucky and privileged position. So I felt very lucky to be able to take the time off work, save up enough money to take this, and then maybe some time after to work on stand-up comedy, and started working with this Bellingham group who I did their Zoom comedy shows. And I pitched them the idea. I said, hey, if I walk the Pacific Crest Trail, will you help me organize a special around my experience in the PCT? And the person was like, yeah, his name's Nathan Romano. And he was like, I'm in, let's do it. We'll find you the venue, we'll market it. Let's make this work. This is a cool story. And I was like, all right, this is my, I'm gonna jump into comedy with both feet, head deep into the water.
Have you ever thought in all of your time out on the trail, I suppose you might've gotten into a Zen kind of space, but what is comedy for? Like, evolutionary speaking, you know, there's a evolutionary reason for just about everything that us humans do. Why comedy? What is, did you ever think about that much? Do you have any theories on that?
I'm kind of come into this with the preface of, I've been doing this for a year. So take whatever I say and just be like, all right, he's talking about his experience from a year, but from 8 years of teaching experience, classroom teaching, I can say that one of the biggest things that I like about comedy is that it builds a relationship right away. If you can make somebody laugh, they're on your side. They're part of your in-group. They're part of your tribe. Once you make them, you make yourself likable and you make them laugh. And like, there's a good mix, I believe, of both ego and satisfaction of, I made you laugh, but also you're enjoying yourself. Now you're going to make me laugh. And it's this, like, Pete Holmes has this analogy of that. It's like a back and forth tennis match. And I love that analogy where it's like, you go, and you can do this with anybody. And that's why the trail was so fun, is because you get to meet new people every single day. There's day hikers, section hikers, other through hikers. And if you can just form that relationship and build that bond and serve them up something funny, or they serve you up something funny, and then you hit it back, and then you've got this back and forth, and it can be absurd, it can be serious, it can be silly. So I'd say when you asked me that question, the first answer was relationship building. It builds this bond.
A rapport.
And I love that rapport. I love that. And then I'd say the second is, it's all about the surprise. I love when people aren't expecting you to be funny or to be absurd, and then you catch them off guard and they're like, are you serious? And it's like, no, I'm not serious. And they start laughing and they're like, oh, and then they... It breaks down, to piggyback on that rapport, it breaks down, you know, that almost like subconscious evolutionary, like, I need to protect myself and I need to protect other people and my tribe. And if you can present yourself as, hey, I'm not a threat, let's have some fun, let's get silly, it builds the rapport, and it makes the world a lighter place for that moment.
Sure, sure. It is a as you said, a mechanism to make friends, basically, and that's what they say about smiling in general. That's a de-arming kind of technique, is to smile. Eric Idle, Monty Python, wrote an entire book about the reasons for comedy. One of his characters in this book is a robot, an android, that is trying to figure out the reason for comedy, why did it evolve? And he says, well, apes in the jungle, monkeys have a sign language, and they have a sign for snake. you know, for danger. So the first monkey that ever signed snake when there was no snake gets one over on his friends, and it's a laugh, and he gets the banana instead of, you know, and says the first monkey that ever stood up. Is that the beginning of stand-up comedy?
I think so. And it's funny, I read that in our Sapiens, where monkeys will trick each other so they can go up and grab all the stuff. So is comedy just a form of manipulation? Maybe. Maybe it's just to steal bananas from other people.
In essence, at its lowest form, it's really just to get one over on your buddy and take his stuff.
Oh, in comedy at its lowest form, you're talking to the right guest, because I'm definitely starting at the lowest form and, you know, working your way up. And it's an ever changing craft where you're editing, you're working on, okay, is this premise relatable? Did the punchline work? Did I give it enough time? You're always constantly evolving it. But at the baseline, it's funny because it's just like, you know what? You can see comedy as silliness. You can see comedy as peacocking or manipulation if you want. But at the end of the day, you're just trying to make somebody laugh. You're just trying to cheer somebody up.
Have you run into hecklers yet?
It's like one of the things that I found so funny when I'm on the Pacific Crest Trail, and people who are on the PCT are such goal-oriented, very encouraging people. And when I tell them I'm walking to my first solo stand-up show, I want to be a comedian, they're so supportive. And then they always ask, like, they're so polite. They're like, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to do a trail show. Do you guys want to come? I'm going to tell a few jokes. It's just free entertainment. We're out in the woods. Do you want to be my audience? And they're like, yeah, can I heckle? And I'm like, what kind of question is that? You're the most polite heckler. I was like, no, man, I'm sensitive. Don't heckle me. Or good luck, like, try it, but I'm ready. Especially now that you've asked, like, now I've already worked on, oh, your head, you're this one. Kind of this bald guy, the very shiny head, is like, can I heckle? And I was like, all right, man, let's do it. And like in my head, because part of the PCT is everyone has a trail name. It's a weird tradition. Nobody really knows why, but it's just part of it. You just take on a new name. And most PCT hikers are in an existential crisis anyway, so it's kind of fitting. And this guy was like, can I heckle? And I was like, sure. And then he starts to yell. Okay, so I was handing out, sorry to give so much setup.
That's okay.
I wanted to think of promotional material for my show that through hikers would like. And it's like, they don't want more matches. They don't want anything that weighs. They don't want more stickers. Toilet paper. Everybody needs toilet paper. So I was like, I'm going to put my face, a cartoon version of my face, on toilet paper and say, shitty comedy show, Bellingham, Washington. I grab like 7 or 8 little squares. I put it in a little plastic bag. And that's what I would hand out to people. And people loved it. So one of the nicknames for toilet paper is called a shit ticket. And this guy, I start doing my stand-up show, and he's like, hey, shit ticket. And I was like, what did you call me? And he's like, shit ticket. You're the guy that hands out toilet paper with your face on it. I was like, oh, that's weird. Coming from someone whose name is Butt Plug. And he's like, that's not my name. And I was like, I don't know. Your head looks like it, and it kind of serves the same function. And it made people laugh, and it made him laugh. And it, like, because he had asked, he kind of knew it was coming. But I wasn't going to just come at him out of the gate and be like, hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for coming out to this trail show. Oh, look at this butt plug over here. Like, there's a tact to it, because if you come off too strong to even a heckler, the audience will not be on your side. The audience, in that case, the 4 hikers and 2 deer and 1 bear that were listening, the audience knew that he had asked this question, so they knew that it was going to come, and it's all part of the fun. Like, then it's in a good, positive place. I think most heckling, the way that I've kind of figured it out, is I have little brother energy. I'm a little brother. I have this need to be liked. I have this need to fit in. And it's like stand-up comedy is full of little brother energy. People who are hecklers are those little brothers. They're the ones that want attention. They're the ones that want to be part of the show. They want to be the funny guy. And it's like, okay, I can relate. I'm like you, especially as a classroom teacher. Students do that all the time. They want to impress. They want to peacock. They want to be, oh, I'm the star of the show. And then the way that you handle it is kind of like a good, like the analogy that I talked about before, a good game of tennis, or it's like a good conversation or jujitsu match. You got to know your audience and say like, okay, I can I can go to all 10. I can start making fun of this guy, or I can do it as a one and just be like, what did you say? And then kind of have more of a conversation. Just be like, hey, man, I would appreciate it if you just enjoy the show. If you want to talk to me after, go ahead. So it's, I think it's a balance. And for me, learning crowd work, learning how to deal with hecklers, that's that part of that 10-year journey that you learn as a comedian, is this is how you do it. So fortunately, I haven't had many hecklers. And the hecklers that I've had have politely asked me, and I've been able to prepare for it. It's like a debate.
A rather unique position that you may not have at a nightclub in, you know, in the middle of California or wherever. But again, part of your journey, the hike itself. I mean, how many miles were you walking a day?
Average? I started off strong. I'd say for the first 1,000 miles, I was doing between 20 and 25 a day. And for the first 700 miles, it's the desert section. It's not like when I pictured that, I'm picturing like cactus, like a rolling tumbleweed and just sand for 700 miles. No, it's on the Pacific crest. You're going up and down. You're going into mountain ranges. You're seeing a variety of different types of geography. But for the most part, that section of 700 miles trains hikers. So most, the average hiker might do between like 15 and 20 per day in that section. Then you get into the High Sierras, and that's a challenging, it's one of the hardest parts of the hike. It's one of the most beautiful, but you've got all these mountain passes that you go through, and it really does, you start going from maybe 20 to 25 miles to maybe 15 to 20 on average. Then the next 1,000 miles, it feels like, is Northern California, and it's these long rolling stretches of hills. Then you get into Oregon, and it's a little bit flatter, so you start to bump up to like 25, 30, 35 per day, because you're kind of like, hiking becomes your job. It becomes mundane, it becomes monotonous, and you're just like, I kind of want to just get it over with. You'd think everybody's like all excited to be out there appreciating every moment, but in a 5.5 month long journey, there's days where you're just like, when is this gonna end? And then you get down to Washington. So then you get up to, so to answer the question, it depends on the section.
Of
course. I'd say on average, the whole thing, maybe between 20 and 25.
So the whole trip in is what, 2,700 miles? And you said 5 months. That is commendable, and that is pretty amazing.
It's hard to relate to people because it's so big, and most people don't want to ask questions because they don't want to feel stupid. And I get that. I don't want to feel stupid either. And they'll be like, do you carry all your food for the whole time? Do you have a gun? Are you hunting? Are there crazy people? And it's like, yes, there's crazy people. Of course I have a gun. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't have a gun. You have to see the PCT as short 5-day backpacking trips, short 5-day resupply, where like the most amount of food that you'll carry is 6 days, maybe 7 at most. And if you think about it, I am walking from Mexico to Canada. It's too overwhelming. You won't finish. You have to think about it as, I'm just getting to this next section. And if I get to that next section and I need to take a day off, I'm going to take the day off. Or if I get to that next 5 days later and I'm feeling good, well, I'm just going to grab my 5 days worth of food and then head on out. It's daunting. And in retrospect, I'm very lucky. It's technically 2,654. But there's a section of the trail, because you can't go into the Canadian border. And trust me, I tried. Like, my body hurts, and I heard they have free healthcare, and I was like, I'm walking to that healthcare. They turned me around at the border. As they should have. I looked like garbage, and they don't need me in their country. So it's an extra 35 miles back. So you finish the hike, and then you're like, oh, great, 35 more miles. And I get nervous before comedy shows, so I do a lot of pacing. So I just bumped it up to 2,700 miles.
So speaking of comedy, by the time this episode airs, you will have done two shows, your first solo shows in Bellingham. Tell me a little bit about, again, this, by the time this airs, you'll have been done with it, so we won't know how it went until then, but are you looking forward to this? You got your material prepped? Are you ready to tackle Bellingham and their hecklers and their audiences?
It's like for me, it's like the PCT, but like on a mental or emotional level, where it's, I have all this material that I've worked on, and I almost just want to get up there on stage and just like word vomit everything at once and just be like, all right, choose what you like. You're going to have a good time. So right now I'm in the comfortably anxious, excited stage. And I just have to keep reminding myself, people want to see you up there having fun. People are there to celebrate the end of a journey. They're there to celebrate both you. Cause I'm in this unique position where I'm selling tickets to my show. So people are coming in with a little bit of background knowledge of who I am. So I've got that likability there. They're coming in with a little bit of background knowledge of what is the Pacific Crest Trail. So I've got that going for me. And I'm creating my own safe space in a town where hiking and outdoors activities is pretty common. So I feel fortunate with all that. Then I've got the pressure that I put on myself where I'm selling tickets. And, you know, I've worked on this material for 5.5, 6 months. And I've practiced this material, and it's going to be a great night. It's a quality night, but it's a gamble. It's live education. It's live comedy. Hopefully it's not education. I get up there, and the worst thing I could do is just get up there and act like a TED Talk and just talk people through a slideshow of my trip like I'm talking to my grandma. That's not what I want to happen. I want to entertain people, so I'm putting pressure on myself and a little bit of nervous energy to work hard to make this an entertaining, every joke lands. It's funny from the beginning to the end. I've constructed this story, which is great because when you go up as a new comedian, you're only given, you know, sections where you've got 5 minutes where people don't know who you are. You got to prove and convince them to like you right off the bat. I've got a little bit of room as a new comedian to kind of stretch my legs, to work on new stuff. And even if they're paying for tickets and they're going and they know me, I've got about like 10 minutes of comfortable time to be like, okay, I got 10 minutes to get to know myself and to organize my set and deliver. They'll give me 10 minutes of leeway, I assume. And then it's got to be funny.
I was just going to say something funny. That's a good one. Excuse me. So what is your plans after? Now, you said Minnesota. Is that where you're based? Where do you live when you're not walking a trail?
So it's because I lived abroad for 6 to 7 years, my home base is still like my bank information, my mail information. It's all my parents' house. And it's there's this weird thing in the United States where not really any other country feels this, but there's such an ego tied to having your independence once you leave university. And it's like, I've been fortunate to have a job at ABC Television, to find a job in teaching in Guatemala, in Colombia, to spend the pandemic where I was able to find a temporary job so I could live outside of my parents. But there's something so tied to moving back home with your parents. So whatever I can do to avoid going back to Minnesota, I'm going to do. Not only are there terrible winters, but I want to move to a place where I've got this idea for a TV show, and I want to do the Appalachian Trail in 6 different sections with 6 different comedians who teach me their style of comedy, but I'm going to teach them how to thru hike, and we'll spend a month on trail where we're doing this journey together. We're going to prepare for a mini show at the end of each one of our sections or episodes and call it the Walk of Shame, because a through hike is a grueling, fun, unique experience, and so is becoming a comedian. And I wanted to try to capitalize on this. Okay, I've got this niche market in through hiking. It's one of my passions. I love it. I've got this niche market in comedy where I want to sell, not that I'm a complete comedian, but I'm on a journey both on a hike and to become a comedian. So I'm going to try to give myself 5 to 6 months to sell that towards a production company or a TV company or something where hopefully somebody, we're getting close to the end of the time. I'm getting my light. I go on these long tangents. I'm hoping to sell a TV show. That's it.
That's cool. That is exciting. Where would people find you if they wanted to follow you on the internets and the social medias?
I think Instagram is best. It's a nightmare to explain to people, but it's Sean Powers, all one word. but you have to type the whole thing out. SEANPOWERSALLONEWORD.
Sean Powers, all one word.
Sean Powers, all one word.
Really appreciate your time. I'm very exciting for you. You've taken quite a journey, and I think you're just beginning another one here with your comedy. And good luck to you. I'm really looking forward to